This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. It's time for our weekly look at Congress with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer.
The United States launched its first round of airstrikes against ISIS in Syria on Monday, stirring up more dissatisfaction among those who think a vote in Congress is needed to authorize military force.
And some environmentalists are applauding President Obama's climate speech at the UN yesterday. But what role is Congress playing in any of the policy he's seeking internationally?
Paul Singer joins us every week at this time. It's good to have you on, Paul.
Nice to be here. How are you?
Good, thanks. So let's start with the American airstrikes against Syria, which began on Monday. Pentagon spokesperson said this is only the beginning, and there have been calls in Congress for a vote to authorize military force. Now, this is, you know, to say the least, sort of a sticky subject for Congress right now at this particular junction in time. Where do you think we are with that possibly happening before the elections?
Well, you know, there's three kind of relevant things here. The first is that Congress voted a couple of weeks ago to approve the arming and training of Syrian rebel groups. So that was the first opportunity for Congress to really get on the record endorsing a public engagement of Syrian fighters by the U.S. military. They've been doing some of this kind of clandestinely in the past. But that authorization expires the second week of December. So at that juncture, Congress is going to have to vote on something. That also is tied to the year-long funding bill for the federal government. And to avoid a federal government shutdown, they'll have to extend the funding for federal agencies also on that same bill, middle of December. So there's a sort of a must-pass bill with an already passed provision on it. But both of those provisions give an opportunity for Congress to mess around a little bit. They could reconsider whether or not they want to vote again on the authorization to train and supply. They could be dealing with a funding request of some sort for the administration on this action. And then there's a third question of a standalone authorization of military force in Syria. That's the toughest one. Because at that point, you are essentially giving the president the authority to conduct a war. And that makes some folks in Congress very, very, very nervous.
Well, those first things you outlined sound like they could all be put off until after Election Day. But that authorization of military force specific to Syria, and if they don't do it now, it's maybe a weird argument to make not to do it now, but to do it 3 months after it started. Is there any kind of pressure to make something happen before November?
Nope. Nobody's coming back to vote on that. I can almost assure you, Congress is out of session. They have no intention to come back. I would be stunned if for some reason they decided to come back and have this vote before November 4th. Now, of course, I've been surprised before, but but then we get to the problem you're raising there, Rob, which is that, well, what's the point of voting to authorize military force if we've been using military force in the country for the past 6 weeks? You know, it becomes kind of a moot point. Part of this is, I think, going to depend on how this battle goes. I mean, if this becomes a bigger and bigger and bigger campaign over a period of time, and particularly it becomes the issue of having Americans on the ground or killed, God forbid, in action on the ground, that's when Congress is more likely to swing into action.
And how much does this have to do with the fact that the elections are coming up, the midterms, and that this is a muddy situation?
Oh, almost everything has to do with the elections coming up. I mean, I think that's part of the issue, right? And I also give these guys a certain amount of credit. I mean, it's early enough in this campaign. It's a little unclear to everybody what's happening, what's going to happen, what the outcomes are going to be, what the end point is, what the long game is, what the long view is for the United States. I think that for Congress, voting on an authorization of military force that might be in effect for many years is a little bit of a dicey situation because they're not sure what they're buying. They don't know exactly what this war is going to look like. And you can tell even now, okay, we've got airstrikes going on. We're not sure how many of them are Americans. We don't know how many of them are other nations who are conducting the airstrikes on our behalf. It's just, I think there is a serious concern amongst members of Congress about not wanting to get out ahead of this train. Except, of course, in a couple of cases, you know, I think the John McCains of the world, the hawks who really believe that the military might of the United States is our most important role in this part of the world, easier for someone like McCain to vote on this. harder for somebody who might be running for re-election or running for president in 2 years.
Well, moving on to another issue on the world stage, President Obama made a speech at the UN yesterday calling on the world to be more ambitious about stemming climate change, trying to put pressure on China to play a bigger role. So when President Obama makes speeches like that, pitched kind of to an international audience, how much do they matter domestically and they have any relationship to what Congress might vote on, probably not soon, but say in the next year?
Yeah, that, you know, Obama is making an appeal that I think you fully understand, right? There's not a lot the Americans can do to fight climate change by ourselves. Some of the heaviest emissions that are contributing to climate change are taking place overseas. Some of what the United States is trying to do is to help economic development in those countries in a way that is more sustainable and more emissions friendly, as it were. But almost none of that involves Congress, and Congress has made it very, very clear they don't want to do a whole lot on environmental issues. And you've seen, you know, if any of your listeners watched Jon Stewart and The Daily Show, they saw a funny little takeout a couple of nights ago on the House Science Committee that was basically complaining a lot about any kind of effort to regulate greenhouse gases or even to address climate change. So I wouldn't expect Congress to vote on much, and I wouldn't expect the president's speech at the UN to encourage or to push Congress to do much. I mean, honestly, and I mean this in, you know, with no criticism of the president, the fact of the matter is that this UN trip is going to be remembered for what he said about war in Syria, not what he said about climate change. So that's the topic that's going to come home, and particularly to Congress, is going to be war in Syria. For the near foreseeable future, I don't expect climate change to be a point of conversation, particularly if the Republicans win the Senate next year.
And, you know, on another point there, does the president have the credibility to be making a speech like this? Reportedly last year, India, China, and the United States were among the top carbon emitters.
Right. Well, I mean, he can say a lot of things about things we want to do, things we'd like to do, things we should do. My recollection is, and I'm not a climate change expert by any stretch of imagination, my recollection is we could never get the U.S. Congress to ratify treaties, you know, that would bind us to any of these targets. So, you know, it's hard for the United States in general to demand that other people cut their emissions when, as you said, we are not the best actors on our own front. But on the other hand, you know, Obama is pushing regulations to ratchet down emissions from power plants, some of the biggest sources here in the United States. So it's not like we are not taking the challenge seriously at some level. Whether that's enough to convince international partners to play along, I don't know.
Lastly, before I let you go, Paul, I know you at USA Today are keeping track of the role women are playing nationally in the race for the Senate. Yep. To what extent is the future of the Senate in the hands of women in office?
Well, it's, you know, it's both in the hands of women in office, and in some cases, I think it would be very clearly, and women voters are going to be very, very key in some of these races. You know, if the Democrats can motivate women to vote for Michelle Nunn in Georgia, for instance, that's a seat that the Democrats think might be in play, a Republican seat that might be in play. Obviously, if the Democrats are going to still have control of the U.S. Senate next year, it's going to be because a woman named Mary Landrieu managed to survive her re-election bid in Louisiana. It might be because a woman named Jean Shaheen survived her re-election bid in New Hampshire. You know, there are a lot of women candidates that the Democrats are relying on. Kay Hagan in North Carolina, another one, women incumbents who Democrats are relying on to save their majority. Now, also a couple of women Republicans running that will be interesting. Shelley Moore Capito from West Virginia is almost certain to be the next senator from West Virginia. She's a Republican.
Paul, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
Thanks, Rob. Have a great day.
You too. That's USA Today politics editor Paul Singer. He joins us each week at this time to talk about the latest news from Congress.